Hey, this is Ruben, and nobody asked me to do this.
What up, y'all? This is Joe, and nobody asked me to do this.
Today's episode features a conversation we had with Scott Homan and Ryan Sutter. They were in New York City to premiere the documentary Witness Underground at the NYC Independent Film Festival. This film, written and directed by Scott, follows a group of musicians, songwriters, and singers who are all former Jehovah's Witnesses. Ryan, who is joining us today, is a musician and part of this group that ended up creating their own punk label, Nuclear Gopher.
Yeah, it's like an indie rock label. It has all kinds of music in it, really. But yes, that's right. All the rest of that's correct. Oh, I guess the key thing would be that it was a label within the Jehovah's Witnesses.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we didn't start the label after. The label was while we were still Witnesses.
Nice. How did you become involved with the Jehovah's Witnesses? Each one of you, if you can give us a short synopsis of how you became Jehovah's Witnesses.
Okay, so I'm the director, Scott Homan. My parents... my grandparents joined it in their retirement back in the 70s, and they moved far across the country. And then later they got my dad, and because my brother and my aunt and their kids joined, and then my dad tried to bring us into it. My mom never really joined it, but she kind of went along with it. Just as like, oh, we're going to that church now? Okay, whatever. We were in it. We went to all the meetings, but my parents didn't like do talks or anything like that. Didn't really participate very much. I got baptized at 17. Just to end that, like, that's how I got into it. Just my parents raised us in it, around it. I remember my last birthday at like 5 or 6, and my last Christmas, a pile of presents.
For me, my parents, they weren't raised Witnesses, but a couple months after the birth of my older brother, they ran into a Witness neighbor who gave them the Blue Truth Book, and they started studying, and they got into it before I was born, so... By the time I was born, the Christmases and birthdays were already off the table. So then I was just sort of raised with it from the beginning and never had any idea that they were ever anything else.
How did you guys know each other? How did you meet? Same congregation, same circuit?
Actually, that's a fun thing. We crossed paths a number of times in like early 2000s, but never met each other. And by the time I knew who he was, he wasn't in the religion anymore. So he was sort of like the poster child of what you're not supposed to do.
And he was supposed to child of bad association.
he was the worst association possible. He was like the city apostate.
I'm one of the most infamous ex-witnesses in the Twin Cities metro area.
Yeah, for sure. That's not an understatement. or an overstatement. So I knew of him from back then because I was a musician as well, and I was in a band with my high school friends. And then I met Witnesses because my dad was encouraging me to hang out with more Witnesses, and started when I got a car, I could like drive and meet some more. I was from Wisconsin, so like, you know, a couple hours away there was cool Witnesses, or 1 hour away in some congregation there was some that played music. So I formed a band in the religion, and then that became super complicated as people started getting disfellowshipped, as they do when they're 18, 19, 17, whatever. And then I ended up moving to Minneapolis. So I because I was in a band, I got to meet a lot of these artists and musicians. When I got to Minneapolis, they were there, and I knew that some of us were already friends, and that I really kind of embedded myself in that culture, the music culture, because those were the most interesting people in the religion that I'd ever met. And I was like, oh, I could actually embrace this religion more fully with these people. A few years ago, I reached out to Ryan because I knew he existed all these years, but I was like, I'm going to tell a story. It'd be really cool to work with him on that story because he's like the main guy at the heart of the music scene. He was the main guy at the heart of the music scene. He must have a story to tell because I never heard that story. I just knew that he left the religion. I never got the full details. So I wrote him. That's it. Like three years ago we met for the first time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So you both were involved in music as Jehovah's Witnesses, but then you met up later, heard about the super apostate, and you're like, hey, what is a super apostate doing with music?
Yeah.
And that's kind of like where it all started. Is that kind of like the gist of what you were saying?
That's the gist, yeah.
Yeah, right. That's the gist. He hit me up one day on social media and was like, so you don't know me, but I know who you are, and I've got questions, and I'm making these movies about XJW coming out stories, and I think I'm very interested in hearing your story. And he didn't say because you're, you know, the infamous super apostate, but it was sort of implied. And So I just kind of gave him the story. Like I wrote him kind of a big long response, and I kind of said, here's what happened. And then he said, you know, that we really do need to talk. So then I flew out to Denver and we met for the first time in person, and he interviewed me, and that's actually like the main interview in the film. And so it was very, very sort of taking advantage of the situation and just sort of jumping in, and me trusting him, you know, to do all right with it.
Yeah, actually, the Ryan sitting down in the chair with the lights and the microphones and cameras rolling is when we met. So what you see in the documentary for the first time is us talking for the first time in our lives.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, okay. Wow.
It's a unique style that I have. Is like, if I meet you and then we have to have the whole conversation over again on camera, it's like not going to be as energetic.
Yeah, so I started wanting to start to tell him the stuff when we first like met in person. Like I showed up at his house and I wanted to start telling him, and he's like, "No, shut up until I've got cameras."
Yeah, I understand. It's kind of hard to like recapture that energy when you start recording.
Yeah, that's right.
Ryan, when you left, like, at what point did you stop believing? Because you were the super apostate.
Yeah, I stopped believing at 30, and then I was out within weeks.
Oh, okay.
And you were known because of the music, or because you were you considered an apostate because you were outspoken in the music, or because you
had
a group of people?
Yeah, no. So here's the thing. So at the time, I wasn't considered a bad associate at all. I had been a witness my whole life. My whole family were very active. You know, I had been a pioneer. We were totally great. And that's why I was able to be kind of the person really pushing with all the music and the music stuff, because our community was very, very within the bounds of what you're supposed to do. Like if somebody got this fellowship, they weren't in the band. We didn't get involved with worldly music and stuff. We weren't doing like stuff that would get us in trouble. And so we were able to, you know, set up a show at a coffee shop, and then like some elder would be in the audience and be like, you know what, this is good, clean fun these kids are having, you know. I left for totally different reasons when I kind of had an epiphany that there's no way that the Garden of Eden and the flood and stuff could be historically accurate. And I just kind of went through this very fast dissolution of like believing that there was a real historicity behind it. And that sort of crumbled the whole thing for me in a very brief period of time. And then I was like, oh man, this sucks, because my entire life is here. All my friends and family are here. I've got this amazing music scene with really cool, creative, fun people. I don't want to leave this. But then also I had a kid, and my kid was 9. And I was like, I can't teach my kids something that I know isn't true. I just can't do that. Like, I couldn't live with myself doing that. And so then it was like, okay, I guess we're just going to have to see what happens here. And then once I started telling people what I believed, and this happened very fast, but once I started telling people what I believed, it happened super, super hyper fast. And then nobody wanted to talk to me, but I still wanted to tell people stuff. So I started blogging it. And that's when I became Mr. Super Apostate, because I was putting stuff on the internet that was questioning stuff. And I was just asking, like, okay, this is what I'm learning, and this doesn't jive, so how can this possibly be true? And then, of course, nobody was supposed to read it, because now I'm this terrible guy, but everybody was reading it, and then a bunch of other witnesses left because of stuff I wrote. Then I really got the label, right? So it was sort of a combo of, like, I was actually fairly well known for being a good witness, and I was in the middle of a lot of healthy stuff, and then I left super fast, and then I wrote all this stuff on the internet, and then other people were like, yeah, you know what? Ryan's right. And then they left. And then pretty much that put the nail in the coffin for me.
Did that include people that were in Nuclear Gopher, your group of people? And did all of them leave eventually?
Not everybody. Like, my brother is still a witness. And he was one of the musicians. My sister, same thing, and her husband. But most of the other subjects in this documentary are people who were involved in it and then left after I did.
All of them.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And they all left because of stuff I did or said on one level or another.
You started questioning. You didn't go to the elders. You just immediately just stopped believing. And
well, actually, I did go to the elders. And I spent like a night of like 3 hours in the basement with some elders going through every single thing. Mm. And that I realized after that one event that I got to a point where one of the elders said, you know, I don't know how to answer any of what you're talking about. I don't know the answers to these questions. You know, it's even possible the society's wrong about this. You should consider, you know, really what it means for your life, and whether or not there's enough other good fruitage of the spirit and good things about staying that you should just stay anyhow. And I'm like, whoa, an elder is telling me that I might be right and the society might be wrong because he doesn't know either. And I was like, I guess I'm not going to really get a lot of answers here. But I study real fast. I read real fast. I plow through books real fast. So I had a pretty accelerated
deconversion.
Yeah.
What that elder said to you sounded like a threat. Like he was kind of telling you like, yeah, we're lying, but if you leave, you could lose a lot.
Yeah. I would say that's an accurate reading. Yeah. Although once I've had a witness come to my door and I said, you know, you don't want to talk to me. I'm like,
fair warning.
I even knew who she was, right? Like I was like, listen, sister, you know, you maybe did not recognize me with the beard, but I know you and you don't want to talk to me. And she goes, do you think you found something better? I'm like, yeah, I totally did. So, sorry.
On a similar note, when I was having my leaving experience, I talked to an elder. I said, well, how do you think the animals from the Ark got to Australia? He's like, oh, that's easy. God just used magic and poofed them there. I'm like, so our God, A, uses magic, and the technical term here is poof.
Poof.
Like, I don't think I can believe in a God that uses poof as a mechanism for transferring creatures he created on the planet.
God magic theory. Never fails.
Yeah. Kangaroo, poof.
Yeah. If that was as easy as it was, why do you have to do the whole flood? You know, just like poof people away then, if that's what it takes.
No, one thing I do want to make clear, though, like, I went through this real fast in the space of maybe between like 2 and 4 weeks, but I didn't actually leave, like write a letter and say I'm not a witness anymore. That was a year.
Oh, wow.
I did spend a year. Everybody started shunning me immediately because
they're doing damage control.
You had ideas and you opened your mouth.
Yeah.
After a year of that, I was like, I guess I might as well just write the letter because it's going to be the same.
Yeah, like you don't have a relationship. So you might as well just.
But
make
I had
sure
clarity,
no,
and I felt good about it.
Scott, did you write a letter? How did you end up?
No, I just thought that I was giving them power, and I was like, I'm done with this organization. I don't care about their rules. They have no power over me. And writing the letter to me, and everyone has their own opinion about this, but writing the letter is a way to play their game. They want you to write the letter to get rid of you forever. They want to have a thing to point to, a document to point to, like. This person made this in a way, it's like their form of legal documentation that you're no longer accessible to anyone in the truth, in the, I almost said it, in the religion.
Right.
That's a hard one to get rid of. I've cut myself out of the truth.
Yeah.
Well, that's funny. Falsehood. So Ryan, do you feel that the opposite, like the writing it empower you, or was it something that you just felt at the time you had to do, or do you still agree with, or do you agree with Scott, or do you have a different point of view?
I think it's a personal choice. I think it's whatever gives you a sense of peace. I know a lot of people view it the way Scott just expressed, and I support that 100%. For me, I liked the clarity of just knowing that they had no claim. I wasn't on a piece of, I wasn't associated with a congregation's, you know, stale publisher file somewhere. I knew what I needed at the time for closure.
Right.
And I think that's different for everybody.
It bothered me for years that I might be on a list somewhere that they're counting me as a number. It's like, I didn't vote for this. I'm not on your numbers.
Yeah.
You did,
but
you
the way, yeah. Place.
Yeah, right.
I mean,
I view it the way Scott views it, and Ruben views it the way Brian does.
I was just gonna say that. I'm like, Joe, that sounds like us. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, it sounds like us.
Like I'm not writing a letter. They have no power over me. But
yeah. and it's true. They have no power. But at the same time, it was kind of like Ryan said. It was kind of like I did it for myself. You know what I mean? Or I didn't want to be counted as a number. And also, it kind of impacts people. Oh my God, he's disassociated. Why? I'll be the guy. I'll be that guy. I'll be the guy that people point to. I don't mind that at all.
I kind of think of that religion. Like right then, I was like, it's like they're all playing some game. Like they're playing Monopoly or Risk. Mm-hmm. And like I quit, or like they took out my last country in, you know, Indonesia or whatever, and I'm dead. So I'm gonna go do something else, and then they're all telling, you know, trying to have control over me still. It's like, no, I'm not even on the same planet anymore.
Exactly.
I don't care. Like, you guys can play your fictitious game over there where it's, you're warring and conquering the planet. Like, I'm not enjoying it.
I don't know, man. So I think there's people who are of the you can't fire me, I quit persuasion. And people who just walk out and don't even bother resolving.
So how did the idea of the documentary come to be? Like, how long has it been in production? Because I posted this in our group, I want to say like November of last year. I think you guys posted a teaser and I shared it in the group.
Yeah.
Because I thought it was fascinating. So, like, no problem. Like, how long have you guys had this in production?
I crowdfunded it in 2018.
Okay.
Lloyd Evans had me on his channel, and that was a big part of, like, boosting to the big XJW audience. I really crowdfunded to the XJWs. Like, a couple hundred people supported it, and, like, 1,000 people followed it, and we got money to shoot. 2018, we filmed it after the crowdfunding. Like January was the beginning of the crowdfunding through March. And then I wrapped up in April this year, so... It's like a 3 years and a little bit, but from conception and like this concept and like trying to tell this story for me, like my key thing is shunning. And that's what the movie really gets into deeply and how the religion really works.
I'm sure you've seen other ex Jehovah's Witness documentaries. You had mentioned to me that Gregorio Smith, who I was there for his premiere.
Cool.
He's going to be there on Friday at this festival.
He's going to come down for it. I'm excited to meet him.
And I was wondering, how do you feel your documentary is different than other ones that you have seen?
I haven't seen everything that's out there. I have seen a lot, though. And really what bothered me was, after leaving the religion, all the media about the religion is usually like a news agency or a couple documentarians who've made some things. But usually what they do is they kind of focus on the pain and the suffering of people on the outside of the religion. And it's sort of, I felt that a lot of what's out there, especially like what Leah Remini does is a great example of what I don't like, which is sort of showing how people are hurt by this. And then that's the end of the story. People are just hurt by this. And now we should all be depressed. End of the movie. I felt that it's a bit, these people are getting their stories out and that's great. And there's room for all kinds of content. I think there's so much more to tell than just these people were hurt and that's the end. There's like the most exciting, maybe the most important thing I've ever done in my life is to leave this religion, at least for my life. Like, at least I got out and I can now do whatever I want. And I do whatever I want. I've had an awesome time and it's been a really exciting life out in the real world. I've traveled a lot. I've lived abroad for 7 years. I've lived in a bunch of big cities and I've pursued different careers. And now, you know, I work at a startup and I love what I do. One part of the story I really wanted to tell was like what life is like on the outside and like what kind of life philosophies you can have on the outside and like what a healthy living can be on the outside. Rather than just talk about the pain, even though we do talk about that kind of stuff in the film.
Yeah.
I love that answer.
Oh my God, I do too.
Yeah, I love that answer because this is the conversation Ruben and I have all the time. Like, yes, we moved on. Now what? Like, what are some of the positive stories about people leaving the organization? So definitely love that.
I want to build on that for one. I'll be real brief, but the one thing I want to say on top of that is the reason I love this film, I was just trusting to participate. But it was important to me to tell that exact fact, because to me, if you don't give people who are considering leaving, if you don't give them some reason to believe that after they leave, there is hope and there is life and they can enjoy things and they can do things and they can grow, then there's nothing but fear, right? And they may only have fear. Fear might just keep them in or pretending, even if they don't believe it anymore, or they might actually leave but then spend the rest of their time, and everybody knows lots of ex-witnesses like this who sit around and go, yeah, but I know it's probably still the truth, and I feel guilty. And they're out, but they're not really out. And so it's super, super important to me that, like, this movie isn't about just me leaving 15 years ago or, hey, let's dig into all of the stuff Ryan wrote on the blog or whatever. It's about having a life afterwards, too, and that's a huge deal.
Part of the reason why we do this podcast is kind of that same mentality, right? Because we do talk about people's stories, but we also like to laugh and we like to remember things. You know, I imagine that in a film, you have experiences where you guys, yeah, I remember when we used to play this band and we used to play and this elder came and he liked it. When you talk about things like that, it really makes an impact on people. It makes an impact on people who are witnesses too, because they're listening. If all they hear is fear, 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 anger, 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 it's not going to attract them. It's just going to solidify what the congregation tells them.
Exactly. Plus, it feeds into what they tell you will happen when you leave, that you'll just be an angry person. And like to hear stories like you guys, that, you know, you've moved on and you moved on to happy and a better life leaving. It's opposite of what they're telling you would happen. So,
yeah.
Plus, the movie's damn funny. There's a lot of there's a lot of stuff to laugh at. There's a lot of stuff to laugh at. It's like it's fun. We were having a great freaking time.
While you're in, you mean? Like that community was really special. So like, what's really cool and was like a complete gift as a filmmaker was that both Ryan and another person in the film, the author James Daniel Zimmerman, who's what do you write? What's the name of his book again?
Oh, James wrote a book called Deliverance at Hand: The Redemption of a Devout Jehovah's Witness. Very, very good book. It's been published by Free Thought House a couple years ago.
Total plug, but it's a good book.
I know. Check it out. No James problem. Plug. Any witnesses or ex-witnesses should read James's book. It's fantastic.
So these two guys in the religion were making films, and there's a whole like bunch of people in the religion who are making these movies. And it was like, oh, let's write a short film and go to the mall and shoot it, is like one of the lines from the film from Eric, another guy that he will tell you about. But they had all these films, like goofy horror films. Like they have like two horror shorts, like trailers to horror films that didn't exist.
They're fake trailers to horror films that didn't exist.
And then like a golf film, or like it's like a comedy golfing film.
About a hyper competitive mini golf player.
Just like super over the top, campy, B-rated, low budget like comedies and weird films that just like make you chuckle. So what was really cool is like, obviously they're not the best films in the world, no offense, but we pulled out some highlights from a lot of those films and put them into this film to kind of paint a picture of like the characters of the people in the movie. When I showed the film to a bunch of my friends in LA, I just moved to LA a couple years ago, so I met all these people. A lot of them are in the film industry, and none of them have any association with the religion. A lot of people were laughing at all those old campy videos that they did, and that was really fun to have that reaction. Whereas we showed it in Madison at the Madison Wisconsin Film Festival a couple weeks ago, and we had like a private screening with friends. And a lot of old friends of mine from high school, and then some friends that were ex-witnesses from when I was in my early 20s, kind of getting into the music scene. And everyone there was like not laughing, but like sobbing. So like a very different reaction, because like it just had such a hit for them emotionally and triggering. But yeah, having the gift of all that archival footage, and there was like 7 or 8 music videos, and like just so much that makes it a real documentary about like what it was like to be a Jehovah's Witness and be these goofy kids, you know, under these restrictions, but they're still having a really good time. So it kind of really humanizes the Jehovah's Witnesses in a way that I've never seen any movie do before. And then my big goal beyond that was then, of course, these are the same people who leave the religion, and it humanizes them and shows you what they're really like on the outside in the present day. If a witness watches this, they would think, yeah, they're not wrong. Like, this is very accurate telling, portrayal of what it's like. That was a goal for me.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, the thing that's so cool about this, and why I do agree with Scott, this is very different. I haven't made a big study of a lot of the JW documentaries, but when I see things, they seem to generally always be about the Watchtower and not about the witness, right? Like, people will talk about their story, but only in how it relates to the Watchtower. Also, people who aren't witnesses who are seeing this film are also getting very touched by it and very impacted by it. And my hope is all these people who aren't witnesses that know somebody who is and didn't know anything about their friend who's a witness, except that their friend, you know, didn't show up for Christmas at school or whatever. I'm hoping it creates some conversations. Like, I would like them to have an emotional impact to this movie that they wouldn't if they thought this movie was just about the Watchtower Society or doctrine or whatever. And I would like them to have it draw them closer to other people, because I think that the power of like just human connection beyond talking about topics or doctrine is how people will get better and how people will get out.
See, I was going to ask like what would surprise people about this documentary, and I know hearing that surprises me, so I'm definitely looking forward to seeing it.
Yeah, we've had several people that have no connection to the witnesses at all see this movie and they're like, wow. And they're like, that reminds me of all of it. I had no idea. Like, this connects to my story. And it's great because, again, to Scott's words, it's like when you humanize that we're all humans, we all have struggles, we all have things, and then you help people understand somebody else's struggles or somebody else's context that is not the same as your own, then you have a chance to have there be a better connection and a dialogue. And maybe somebody who is a witness is going to feel less alone. Or maybe somebody isn't a witness at all, but they'll see a parallel and it will be of value to them. And that to me is like so much bigger than arguing about what a book says.
Yeah. I was going to say a couple other surprising things because there are musicians, everyone in the film. Well, James isn't a musician, but he's like a filmmaker and a writer. But Eric, Cindy, Chad, and Ryan are all musicians and have been in various bands. So what's a big highlight of the film is live music, live performance music videos. So we have a lot of archival content like that, but also we filmed a big session and it's all sprinkled out throughout the film of them performing live. And it's like, there's a band that you're going to meet called High TV. You can look up their music now, but they're really highlighted in the film. And, They're an XJW band that formed, that kind of three witnesses after they left the religion kind of got back together to play more music after leaving. So that's really cool. And then Cindy is the front person for that band. She's the songwriter. And we're four guys sitting here on a podcast talking about our experience, but she gives like a really good telling of the female experience. Yeah, those are some of the bigger highlights without giving anything away, really.
Ryan, there are a lot of ex-Jehovah's Witness artists out right now. We have Fifth. I don't know if you heard of him. Holly Brewer is another one.
Holly.
Any thoughts of, have you, any thoughts or plans to collaborate with other ex-Jehovah's Witness artists and bands?
You know, I think I would be very, very open to it. I suspect that after this is out there, I'm going to be getting a lot of good networking and with ex-Witness musicians, and I really look forward to that.
This was one question, but I was wondering for Ryan, what were your music influences for your band when you first started it?
Oh, that's a great question. So initially, my brother and I, Rhett, and we grew up on 70s and like Beatles and that kind of just mainstream, like Dire Straits, whatever. But around the time we hit middle school, we got into slightly weirder stuff, got into like Frank Zappa and Pink Floyd and King Crimson and all sorts of oddball stuff and sort of outsider stuff. My brother became very into the Beach Boys and I moved in more of a poppy direction into more like, I don't know, like Britpop bands and bands like XTC or stuff like Elvis Costello. So I kind of went the singer-songwritery kind of guitar rock route and my brother went more of like the big production route and our music was sort of a mix of the two. And then our younger siblings went in yet other different directions. And so our everybody asks like what genre was our music. And it's like, yeah, it was kind of all of them. Like there was, it depended on which band you were listening to. There was power pop. There was like soft stuff. There was singer, songwriter, acoustic stuff. There was really weird experimental noise. There was art rock. I mean, it was just sort of all over. Also, I mean, like I named my kid after Syd Barrett from Pink Floyd. So that was a huge influence when I was a teenager.
I would say like in general, there's some like his music is like experimental psychedelic rock. Even their first album has like a crazy name, Psychotrauma.
Yeah. Our
bunch of witnesses named their first album Psychotrauma. It's like they're all the interesting group. Right? Hitting it on the nose, actually, before they even realized
it. Yeah, we were hitting it on the nose when we were 12.
Man. Wait, how did the congregation react to that name?
Oh, they didn't know about that. Me and We would mix our tapes and we would take them, we would dub a bunch of copies and we would bring them to school and sell them to all the kids at school so we could like get some extra money to buy more equipment.
Wow.
So where did the name Nuclear Gopher come from? Like, what does that name represent?
Okay, so the true answer is that I found a piece of paper in my room one day while I was cleaning and I had written in my sleep on this piece of paper, the gay laughter of nuclear gophers. And I don't know why I did that. But
okay.
At the time, I was like 14. I was 14. And I looked at this piece of paper and I was like, the gay laughter of nuclear gophers? What in the world? And then I sort of vaguely remembered scrawling something in my sleep and I was like, okay, well, I have a song and it doesn't have a title, so that's going to be the title. And then we just sort of jumped on it from there, and then I invented a tagline for it, which was underground and radiating, which is pretty cool. a nuclear gopher, underground and radiating. That was it. So that was it. That's how it happened. It was apparently something my subconscious wanted me to do.
Wow. That sounds like something from one of the best mushroom trips ever, man.
I gotta say, that one was a gift. Nuclear Gopher just got handed to me, but we made the most of it.
Yeah, definitely. Actually, I really wanted to name the film Nuclear Gopher, and I had a lot of pushback from a lot of different people because they're like, what the hell is that? That's not gonna work. It does not compute. You need something else.
When you were leaving, and I think this goes for both of you, you know, you left for your own reasons. It's not like the music made you leave. Did it become later on the music's fault instead of what you were saying and what you were telling other people? The influence music had, the influence. Like you mentioned Frank Zappa, and Frank Zappa said a lot of stuff that's very skeptical thinking. And it kind of reminded me of the stuff that you were talking about, Ryan, before. Did they kind of make that correlation later and they're like, it was the music?
It's funny because enough of the people who stayed in, right? Enough of the people who were involved in our music scene, including my own siblings, who are still witnesses, they're still musicians too. So it was like, if we attack the music, then we're also still attacking a few people who are still on this good side. So instead they just decided I must have been this immoral person who wanted to go have sex with random strangers or whatever the hell it is they thought I was doing. So I got kind of tarred and feathered instead. But I think that I'm sure it put a damper. Like if somebody tried to do what we were doing now, I'm betting some elders would probably stop in and be like, we got to nip this in the bud, you know?
Yeah.
But I think he's asking like, did music, do you think, influence you even if you didn't realize it? Or like scene of the music and the expression?
I think exposure to thinking and exposure to honest thoughts and feelings, which is something that for me is very well communicated in almost every musical genre ever, is that can't help but free your mind a little bit, right? Like, free your mind, your ass will follow. Funkadelic, you know?
A lot of people ask, like, when's the film going to be out? So I don't know that. It's probably going to be out in, like, next year sometime. And I have to sign a contract with someone to help me get a distribution deal. And it's like, I have to put a bunch of money up front for it. And so what we're actually we're in the middle of the year. And this whole year I've dedicated to going to film festivals. So this is our second win. And there's one last month, one this month. And then, you know, I don't have any other ones that are locked in yet this year. But there's like 40 more that I'm waiting to hear back from. And there's like six every month for the rest of the year kind of thing. And so we might get something last minute. I don't know.
But there may be other opportunities for people to see it over the course of the year, but they'll just have to go to witnessunderground.com and find out.
Yeah, right. If anyone here is listening to this, is interested in supporting this project or projects like it, I created a project years ago and it's still going called XGW Coming Out on the theme that, you know, when we leave this religion, it's not that different from the, I mean, okay, it's different, but it's in similarities to the LGBT coming out experience and a lot of parallels, and there's a lot to learn from their community. But we made this project called XGW Coming Out, and there's a Patreon page for these videos, a YouTube channel, which is all free, XGW Documentary, like three letters, XJW Documentary. And then XGW DOC for XGW Documentary, XGW Doc is the Patreon. So patreon.com, XGW Doc, and then there you can watch everything, and there's a bunch of the behind-the-scenes stuff and extra scenes and, you know, there's little bits of extra stuff and new episodes I haven't released yet are on there. But it's all those are like individual short 5, 10, 18 minute episodes of like following one or two people as they discuss what their experience leaving their religion was like. And there's a lot of that kind of content already, but this is like pretty polished stuff with like, I go travel with these people. I have one bits in Vietnam, one's in Germany, one's in, I have some stuff coming out in Spanish. There's like six Spanish episodes from this excellent guy from Mexico. There's just a lot of cool stuff out there. And that all that money just goes to keeping that going and also funding this whole film. And hopefully another one. Like I'm fishing for a sequel. So all those bands that you know about, I need to hear. We need to hear about them. I'm going to work with them if, you know, and then Ryan's going to produce them, and then you guys can get we can share the love.
Definitely, we'll link them up.
Have
you.
A conversation with them. Yeah, right,
I'm loving the entrepreneurship here, Scott.
Scott has got the hustle.
I'm living my best life right now. I'm having a great time.
Hey, and Ryan, if we want to find your music, where can we find it at?
Well, you can find my stuff at ryansutter.bandcamp.com. That's a good place to find it. You can find a lot of Nuclear Gopher stuff at nucleargopher.org, where you can stream lots of music. That's really mostly older stuff that's sort of to show with the scene from back then. I'm also just like, if you have Spotify, just look for my name. I'm on there.
All right. So sounds good.
I'm easy to find.
It was great having you guys on. Thank you so much.
This was awesome. Good. This is a pleasure.
Thanks. Awesome.
Yeah.
Looking forward to meeting you in person on Friday.
Yeah.
See you. Can't wait.
So we are back. This is the second part of this podcast. And we have already seen the movie. We met up with Scott and Ryan at the film festival. And it was quite the experience.
Yeah, it was good. Good. No, they were good peoples, man. I'm glad we got to see the movie. You know, you meet people on Facebook, you know, seeing their story and, you know, getting a little background into their life was good.
It was nice seeing people there that were not ex-Jehovah's Witnesses, although some of the ex-Jehovah's Witnesses that were invited did end up going. Some of the people that I sent some messages to made it. So thank you for making it and showing your support for this project.
But it was nice seeing, you know, the non-Jehovah's Witnesses, those that weren't Jehovah's Witnesses before, able to relate.
That was very cool to see.
Question and answer. Yeah, the question and answer part at the end was pretty good.
Yes, it was.
I really loved what I saw. You know, I related to a lot of the movie and the documentary. It was interesting in the beginning because when the talk first started, I thought it was going to be one of those documentaries that was triggering. But I loved how they humanized the Jehovah's Witness experience. I've always told folks that, you know, Jehovah's Witnesses are kind of like every other religion up until the shunning part. But, you know, how most of the witnesses in the band were good Jehovah's Witnesses and how they found that loophole. You know, usually if you were good at something, that was a skill that you could use at Bethel. It was the dilemma of living in your passion or leaving all that you know. So it was interesting to see how they navigated to that, especially Ryan. I was able to relate to Ryan, and I loved Cindy's stories. Cindy's story was extremely vulnerable and extremely honest. I felt for her.
This film is different than other documentaries that I've seen in the sense that you're talking about the humanization of the Jehovah's Witnesses. I grew up in California, and I've often said this, that speaking with other ex-Jehovah's Witnesses like yourself or others that were maybe raised in different parts, that certain things weren't allowed. And in California, we got away with stuff. And most of the time when I talk to other ex-Jehovah's Witnesses about some of the things that I saw growing up as Jehovah's Witness or I participated in, people look at me weird. And this is the first time where I'm looking at a film that explores these type of Jehovah's Witnesses that I can relate to a lot more. Because, you know, my friends in California had a band and we'd go watch them play in their garage and they'd pay cover for songs and things like that. And I know that for a lot of witnesses, even in congregations in California, of course, depending on the regions and the personalities of the congregation, you might get in trouble, you might get reprimanded, but it's one of those gray area things, you know, where you're like, you can't really tell somebody not to or disfellowship them for making music or playing music or playing guitar. The ex-Jehovah's Witness experience is in the monolith.
And I agree with you that, you know, it did show that the Jehovah's Witness experience isn't the same across the board. But it does show that for most people, when you leave, the experience is the same. Yes. Like one thing I appreciated was that when he left and he decided this wasn't for him, how quickly things changed for him and his family and how I could relate to that. And when I first saw them in the band and I'm like, oh, you guys are just privileged. But that privilege is all taken away once you decide I don't agree with my tribe anymore. I really related to Ryan's story because when he told his father that he no longer believed, his father cried. And he was saying when he got baptized, my father said something similar when he was saying that, you know, now we're brothers. I'm not just your father. I'm your brother. And when I left, it was, you know, it was heartbreaking to my father. And to see how his family treated him, I felt privileged for how up until this point, you know, how my family still treats me. It's not that bad. Like, you know, if something happened in my family where one of my family members, God forbid, something was to happen, I know, I have faith that my family would not treat me the way his family treated him. And from that point, that's a privilege that I have. So it showed how, no, we're not a monolith. No, how we all may experience the same thing when we leave. But at the same time, from all ex-Jehovah's Witnesses, as much as we want to say privilege outside of certain parameters, and, you know, when it comes to race, when it comes to a nationality, for ex-Jehovah's Witnesses, we all experience that same thing of shunning in one form or another when we decide we no longer want to believe what our tribe believes.
Man, Joe, that was good. That was really good. That was so good.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah, nice. That was such a great point. Like, that's genius. Like, that is, it's really funny. I didn't think of it that way. When we deal with ex-Jehovah's Witnesses or groups of ex-Jehovah's Witnesses and they talk online and you get to know everybody's story. Everybody's story is so different. And that just goes to show, again, it's not black and white.
One of the greatest takeaways I took was how, I believe his name was Eric, and how he broke down how Jehovah's Witnesses show love. And he was able to understand that it's not their fault. And you and I have had this conversation, how love is love, truth. It's so ambiguous now from our experience that I believe that when they're shunning, that most aren't doing it from a evil spot in their heart. Like, they are doing it because they believe this is love, and how the individuals in this documentary were able to see that.
It's complicated, right? Because, I mean, he could feel that way, you could feel that way, somebody else might feel another way, and they might say, well, intentions. What is it?
Mm-hmm. Intent equal impact.
Intent, yeah. Intent doesn't equal impact, right? Yeah. So intent doesn't equal impact. I'm sure that one day if somebody woke up that treated them that way, an apology from them wouldn't be a bad thing, because even though you didn't know you were harming somebody, you were harming them. But the recognition that they can't help it, I think that is a big help. I think that helps in any such situation.
It's triggering in a lot of these ex-Jehovah's Witness discussion groups to talk about positive things when it comes to organization. But I understood and could relate to Ryan when he said how he learned some good skills as a witness. He's not saying that it's not harmless, but you are able to take some of the things that you learned from them and apply it in the world when you leave. And to see that he did that, and others in the story were able to do that, in the documentary, they were able to do that. It was something I could relate to. In the end, I love that it was an honest story. I love that they kept it honest.
Until next time, everyone, take care of yourselves. Any parting words, Joe?
Thank you, Scott and Ryan, for the invite. I love the film. I hope everyone gets to experience it.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Nobody Asked Us to Do This, the Next Jehovah's Witness podcast. Remember, our stories may be varied, but you are not alone. Take off that new personality and create your own. Have a great one.